the LAN parties, episode 175 from the Las Vegas Review Journal, brought to you by Blue Wire. I am your host, Ryan Smith, and with me, as always, my co-host, Lucas Egan. Lucas, how was your weekend, my friend?
My weekend was pretty good. Nothing too exciting. We were just talking before we started recording. My dad actually had knee replacement surgery last week. So I was busy being a good son and helping out around the house and all that good stuff. Luckily, though, I was indoors because it's getting hotter here in Vegas. And I know it's going to get hotter, so I shouldn't complain now. But I'm not ready for this, Ryan. How was your weekend, my friend?
It was good. I was talking earlier before we started recording that I had a house inspection this morning. So basically the weekend was just cleaning, which was nice. You know, there's something very therapeutic for me too about cleaning and just getting your stuff reorganized. And kind of for me, not only having the physical space organized, it also helps me mentally kind of organize myself and whatnot. So it was definitely something that was necessary on my end. Didn't get a lot of gaming in. I did primarily focus on Jedi Survivor. I think I have a couple more missions left, and I should be able to finish that game and then be able to start Tears of the Kingdom. So I'm super excited to start that. We're super excited to talk about it. But first, our guest joining us, Johnny Fuchs, founder of No Sleep Games. We've got Annie and the AI coming out soon. How are you, my friend? How was your weekend? Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Ryan. It's awesome to be here. It's been a great weekend just getting the last little bits and pieces ready for the launch that I'm just so excited for.
Yes. No, and we're really excited to talk about the game and everything that's going on in terms of that. But of course, we've got to talk about some news before we get to the fun stuff here. Lucas, you want to take it away?
Yeah, so speaking of Tears of the Kingdom, it sold a couple of copies during its launch weekend. In its first 3 days, it sold 10 million copies.
Jeez.
So I think that's fair to say it's a success for Nintendo. I don't know what their sales expectations were. I have to imagine that it surpassed them. Like, that'd be crazy if they thought it would sell more, right? Look, I think everyone that I know is having a lot of fun with it. I'm still a little intimidated by the building just because I know I don't have a creative mind, so I just know that all the vehicles I make are going to look super tame, but that's okay. it's you know, if this is like the Switch's swan song, as everybody seems to think it is, what a way to go out as their last like major blockbuster title, and hopefully that just means even better things are ahead for the series. I did not think that a follow-up to Breath of the Wild could come close to having that kind of like sense of awe that we had with Breath of the Wild, since we were kind of returning to the world. But it looks like they did it. So hats off to the team at Nintendo. By the way, there was an interview where they said when they had delayed this game, it was almost finished. They just wanted to polish it. So just to speak to the power of delays to some of these major releases, it's painful in the moment, but I think it's well worth it. And I think Nintendo is actually a pretty solid example of that, of them being like, look, even though it's going to make you guys pull your hair out, we're going to wait until we think we got it right. And you look at the results, and I think that is super smart on their part.
Yeah, gosh, you just can't. I said it before too. I was like, at least for me, I felt like this game, in order for it to be successful, it needed to not just be a reskin of the first game. They needed to introduce new mechanics, new ways to play, and really, you know, especially being in the same area, you know, I feel like it was going to take a lot for folks to be like, yeah, this is amazing. And clearly they have done just that with the different mechanics. I'm in the same boat as you two, Lucas. The whole building stuff is very intimidating for me. There's a reason I don't play Minecraft. I don't have that kind of eye to build things like that. Meanwhile, my daughter's over there building castles and stuff, and I got this little shack. And I'm like, well, this is good enough for me. However, though, the game looks absolutely amazing. This is not surprising that they've sold in 3 days 10 million copies. That is absolutely insane. But I very much feel that Nintendo always has been a put their money where their mouth is. You know, they don't just launch things to launch things, especially these games that are part of their flagship of games, I guess, and characters that they've been known for. They put extra care and extra detail in it. And you're right. You know, I think this is a great example of really utilizing a delay and saying, you know what, we're not happy with this. We're going to just, you guys are going to wait a little bit longer. We got some polishing to do. And clearly they use full advantage of that time to make this game amazing. And I'm excited to jump in. Like I really am excited to jump in and just reintroduce myself with these new mechanics and with the characters as well. So, you know, kudos to them. I can't imagine that this thing is going to be slowing up anytime soon in terms of sales either.
Yeah, no, I think this is going to be one of those Nintendo titles that just hangs around kind of like a Mario Kart that is seemingly on their bestsellers list pretty much every single week there. You know, Johnny, I'm interested because obviously Annie and the AI, which is coming out the day after we record this, but the day before this episode releases. just to mess with people's timing here. You know, through the development process, right, and you start to see certain fans start to look forward to a game. Where is that balance where you think, you know, I always want to tinker, you know, I always want to improve systems. I always want to make it a little more refined to, I think this is a state where I think, you know, we're comfortable where it's at.
Yeah, that's a huge challenge because there's always something else you can do. I don't think any game has ever released without the team feeling like there was something else they could still add to it. Mm-hmm. The way I approached it, I did not want to delay, so I actually gave myself 6 months longer than I imagined in any circumstance that I would need, and then we delayed. And I get it now. I get why it happens so often, you know? one of my team members, Light Return, the musician, he's very passionate about this topic, and what's that quote, a game released early is forever bad?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's entirely true, because you can see some exceptions like No Man's Sky and what they were able to do post launch, but I think it's always better, you know, to launch with a game that you're fully behind. And in the case of Annie and the AI, we were improving things. And then we would realize like, oh, we got the audio so good now. It's perfect. And then I would look at the visuals and be like, well, they're not as good as the audio now. So it was like failing by succeeding, because the contrast between what you were getting so right would make something that before looked good look like it could have some improvement. We were trying to bring everything in line and just make sure that everything was as cohesive as possible. And I think we got there. And, you know, I would love to keep tinkering on this game for a year, but I'd also love to release it and see what people think.
Okay. I am kind of curious right now. So originally you give yourself 6 months past what you think you need, and you totally don't want to delay. What was that process of realization like when you realized maybe a delay could be helpful?
Oh, yeah. I was talking to Light Return about it because it was something that was kind of hard for me. I didn't want to let down the fans who were excited for the game. But I also just I felt like the big thing that we did was a final UI update. We had a UI that was more in the world of the AI, Esme. And then we had realized that it made more sense to bring that UI into the world of Annie. So it's more like Annie's desktop that you're looking at. And it just gives it a much more like familiar personal feel. yeah, I decided it was worth it. And the fans were extremely awesome about it. I think that fans are starting to understand as well that, like, they don't want a game that's not ready. We get a lot of games that aren't ready. You know, when they see that a dev is trying and, you know, they apologize for delaying, but it's all for the betterment of the game. I think most people get behind that.
Yeah, and I think having that transparency and just being able to communicate via Discord, social media, and really being able to connect with these people that are you know, ultimately going to be buying the game and playing it, it's so important to be able to have that kind of transparency and speak on it. And I feel like a lot more people are forgiving to that and more understanding because we've had so many games where it's like, clearly this game is not finished. I can't believe this game was even, you know, was released in this state and at a premium price. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. And I think people have a much greater appreciation when it does come to delays, because no matter what, it's just about being able to play a fun game. And you know, I don't know about you, but I'd rather wait some more time for things to get polished or things to be done correctly, as opposed to just pushing something out and then it's a mess and then people end up hating it anyway. And you're just like, well, you know, what am I supposed to do there? So yeah.
It's not like we have a shortage of games to play in the meantime anyway. There's always always something else out there that we can get to.
Yeah. But kudos to Nintendo's and Nintendo's Nintendo and and Zelda. You know, again, if you haven't had an opportunity to play it or get this, I'm hearing, again, I haven't either, but I'm hearing that it is the real deal here. So if you're a fan of Zelda, you absolutely need to pick up this iteration of it. Moving topics to something a little less. And again, I'm gonna try to be, I don't, there's one thing that I don't like to do. I'm not one to just trash on a game or anything unless the game is like, just like, I mean, this is just, it's, you know, whatever. Anyway, Overwatch, there was a live stream. I thought this was a weird way to announce this, to the fan base and to the audience. But during the live stream, the game director came out with the fact that they are no longer going to be doing the hero mode, not necessarily story missions, but particularly the hero mode. And if you weren't familiar with that, that essentially was going to be story missions with like different skill trees. You'll be able to customize different abilities for different characters. So like, it was really the whole, like, really fleshing out the PvE and story section of Overwatch 2. This was the reason why they stopped supporting Overwatch 1. There was a good like 7-8 month period where nothing, you know, they didn't change maps, they didn't bring in any new heroes, any of that stuff. For the last couple of years now, we've been hearing it's gotten delayed a few times, but they finally came out and said that they are just no longer going to be, they said that it became too ambitious and too big to be able to actively support with the live service portion of it as well. Understandable. Look at any other, if you know live service games, right? They take a lot. They take a lot from the team, all the constant changes, the balances, the reworks. It's a lot. So I can understand that. I guess my issue with that, though, is I'm a little more forgiving if this were, say, like an indie studio or a smaller studio, but this is Blizzard. You're telling me, other than WoW, what else are they supporting? I don't understand. I don't understand how they don't have the team. And essentially, he was saying that they're pulling more and more resources away from the live service and putting them towards this vision of the PvE. And here's the other thing too, is that I also feel bad because there are a lot of hardworking folks that put their hearts and souls over the last few years into this, that is not just us as consumers' loss, it's also their loss. I couldn't imagine putting all that work in, you know, seeing this vision and bringing this to light. And then they're just like, nah, we're not gonna do it anymore. And you know, speaking kind of like what Johnny was saying, and when we were talking about transparency, you can't come in after the fact and say, I'm trying to be transparent. Being transparent would have been telling us a year ago when you knew this wasn't coming out. That would have been the time. Yes, people would have been upset. But, you know, again, I think people would have been a lot more forgiving at that time as opposed to, hey, we've launched Overwatch 2. The main reason was so we can get this PvE in. But also really, and this is just me speculating, of course, they need to change out their loot box system. They couldn't do loot boxes was causing an issue. There was all kinds of government issues. It was akin to like gambling and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. So they've gone to the battle pass strategy and they're doing it that way. And really it almost feels like a slap in the face because it's like, this isn't, I mean, really you just updated the UI and changed some rules, but this is still basically Overwatch 1. Like, I don't even know that you can call this Overwatch 2 because you're telling me that the part of it that made it 2 is no longer going to be coming out in its original, in what was envisioned for this. And again, this has been going on for a while now because Overwatch originally was a failed game called Project Titan in 2016, and they shifted from that to eventually create Overwatch. But it was always meant to, or originally, I'm sorry, the original idea was to make this a multiplayer, an MMO, a first-person MMO was what it originally was supposed to be. So I don't know. This one has me. And again, I'm not trying to, I understand that things like this happen and stuff like that. I just have a harder time when you're telling me you are one of the biggest gaming companies in the world and you can't put resources to make this come to fruition. I have a hard time siding with that, I guess. What are your thoughts? And again, too, this also was a key moment that I thought could have brought in a new audience because mm-hmm. there's a lot of people that don't like the competitive play of PvP and they'd right. rather have a story-based experience or a co-op experience. Not only that, but the lore of Overwatch is so much fun and there's so many areas to explore in it, and this was going to be that opportunity, and they're still going to do that with the missions, but I thought this would have been a great opportunity to not only have some sort of a form of different replayability within the game, but really kind of bolster that lore and the story of Overwatch. So, again, Lucas, you can tell I'm very passionate about this.
Yeah, I'll start by saying, you know, I don't know if I should give them kudos or what for doing it in a live stream. That's a choice, and yeah. My apologies to like their chat moderator because I'm sure that was not the most fun job in the world in the immediacy after that announcement. I think my biggest issue is similar to yours, Ryan. I feel like they knew that this was not going to happen, or they had a pretty good idea that this mode was in serious jeopardy. A long time ago. So, you know, when the delays start to add up, you know, I think there would have been the spot to be like, look, this is what we're struggling with, or, you know, this is why, rather than it kind of come out now. Yeah, it does seem weird to have it like years later and you're like, and as you said, Ryan, you're like, you're Blizzard. Like you are, you're not a small outfit here. So it is always tough. This announcement comes, I think, at a pretty interesting time in Overwatch 2's life cycle. I do agree with mm-hmm. you, Ryan. If this announcement had been, hey, it's coming, you know, this could have been a mm-hmm. way to kind of restart the positive conversation and bring in some of those other players that maybe just dislike the PvP stuff just because it's not their alley. So mm-hmm. it's sad. And, you know, I hope that the teams knew way before, because you're right, Ryan. Like this is the worst part about it is people who had spent all this time building out what this mode was going to be, and to have it be canceled, it's just got to be heartbreaking for everybody on that team. So hopefully they knew and got a little bit of a heads up that, and this wasn't just like thrown out there to the public, and that's how they heard. However, we have seen some pretty stupid announcements like that in general, not just games, like movies and everything like that. So sometimes people are not super kind with the way they announce things. So hopefully, though, they knew.
They did. They did. The team knew that this was not, they've known for a bit now that this wasn't moving forward. I'm guessing that they had already been moved over to focusing more on the live service game and stuff like that. And again, I understand that stuff. I mean, take it for example, when they killed Paragon, Epic, when Epic killed Paragon to bring over those folks to work on Fortnite. Obviously, Fortnite made a ton of money. I understand why this IP that is struggling and, you know, it had just launched, but it had issues. I love Paragon, but I understood why they would make that kind of move. Yes, it makes sense to then do that. And look at the innovative things that they've been able to do within Fortnite. So clearly that was a smart move. But yeah, this is it. I think this is just one of those situations. Again, this is just, it's bad all around. This is something too that I think that, you know, when we had like Jeff Kaplan leave and a bunch of other folks that had been there for so long, that these were essentially their projects. It's a tough task for somebody to have to take on somebody else's vision and trying to fit it within how you do things as well. So it's like, I do have empathy towards that stuff. And I still think that there's a lot that they can do. I think on the tail end of this, though, don't just tell us there's cool stuff coming. Show me a little something. Don't just give me bad news and be like, but it's coming. That's what you told me last time.
that would have been the time to tease something. put out a trailer, even if it's a super short teaser.
Yeah, I agree. Johnny, let me ask you, and I don't know within, you know, things that you guys have worked on. Have you ever been in a position where it's like you got to grind and you put in a ton of work and then you just get to a point where it's like, I don't know. I don't think this can happen. Like, realistically, I don't think this could happen. And I know it happens a lot in game development. But let me ask you, from your standpoint, how would you handle a situation like this?
Yeah, you know, it's tricky. You build out these prototypes and, you know, you're trying to follow the fun. And sometimes something that you're so sure is going to work, you finally get around to playing it, and it really just isn't fun. And then you continue to evolve. And I'm not necessarily saying this is exactly what went down with Overwatch. I'm not sure. But sometimes you just can't make an idea work. I've been reading Sid Meier's memoir, and that's something that he talked about. Trying to remember the game specifically that he was working on.
Kind of drawing a blank.
It wasn't Civ. I mean, obviously that game was fun. That's my favorite game. But he did have one concept that he mentions in that book that he just couldn't make it work. And there was a lot of excitement from the fans for the game. And then there became lots of speculation because it just wasn't coming out. And he just refused to, they pivoted enough times that they finally had a game that worked, but it wasn't to his standard. And he refused to, I believe that was when he was part of Firaxis.
Okay.
It might have been before, but I think it was when he was part of Firaxis, and he just didn't want to release a game that was below the standards of his company. So he had, that was a hard day for him, having to tell his fans that project's just not going to happen. And I think he was in a similar situation where he was working on another project, but it was too soon to put it out there and to make promises that might just lead to him once again apologizing. Yeah. So he wanted to tell him, but he couldn't.
And there are all kinds of behind the scenes things too that obviously us as consumers aren't privy to. So, you know, it's just a tough shake all around. I still love Overwatch. I don't care. I'll still play it. I'm looking forward to the new story missions, and they are talking about moving the story forward. We've gotten a lot of things that have happened in the past, so I'm excited to see the story continue and move forward as well. But yeah, just as, I mean, all around, it's a tough shake. I think this it would have been amazing, but unfortunately, they weren't able to get it done, and you know, that's just the way it is. And really, to be honest, they don't really owe us anything or an explanation or anything. I say those things, but it's like, they're a business. They don't owe us anything in terms of that, but it is nice to be able to get that as fans and obviously within the community and knowing, you know, your community and what they're about, being able to have those conversations. I think we kind of take for granted a little bit, especially in this digital age that we live in. If you were back in the analog days, we had Nintendo Power Magazine, and we were talking to devs and being like, hey, can you fix this real quick? We were just happy to get a game. But we'll see how it plays out. Again, they at least unveiled their roadmap as well. So they're working forward in terms of that. But definitely, I can feel it. And as an Overwatch fan, definitely feel disappointed. But let's take a quick commercial break. Coming back, speaking with Johnny and everything Annie and the AI. We'll be right back. If you love listening to us here on LAN Parties, what's stopping you from grabbing a mic and starting your own show? And there's no better place to host than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So if you're ready to do more than just listening to us talk about your favorite team or game, then make your voice heard and hustle. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box in this episode to find out more. But that's bwhustle.com/join.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for listening to those short messages. And now comes the fun part of the episode. And Johnny, I must say, Annie and the AI has looked intriguing to me for a long time. And I'm really curious to know, take me back to the origin of this game. How did you kind of come up with the concept, and what made you want to work on this title?
Yeah, so I was working just kind of prototyping different ideas, possibly as a main mechanic or even just as a mini game within a larger game. And one game that I kept coming back to for inspiration, very old one, is Minesweeper.
Nice.
Loved it as a kid, you know, like first time I played Minesweeper and brought it up on that old like Windows 95 machine. I had no idea what this game was, and I just like clicked randomly within the grid and just saw how many, you know, how many squares I could reveal until I hit a bomb. And I didn't have any concept of the strategy behind it, but it was
right.
It was still kind of fun as a kid. And then I slowly started to learn the strategy. I finally realized, oh, those numbers mean something. And, you know, you start with like a really basic strategy, like looking at just one tile and trying to guess based off of the number there, like where the next mine might be. But then that leads to more advanced strategies where you look at one tile and then you compare it against another, or even like sometimes three or four tiles to like to deduce without a shadow of a doubt that there's a bomb here, but not here. It's just surprisingly elegant for how simple a game it is. So anyway, that game had always inspired me. So I was trying to see how I could put a twist on Minesweeper as possibly some sort of mini game within a larger game, and playing around with that and thinking about other mini games that have inspired me. And I don't know if you guys have played BioShock, and
yes,
they have that hacking mechanic with the, yep, the pipes game. Mm-hmm. I think it's called the pipes game. It's most known from BioShock. But anyway, I started thinking how I could put a twist of Minesweeper and combine it with the pipes game to do something interesting. And I was iterating on different ideas there. And I went into paper prototype mode. So I bought a board game from Walmart, like a Scrabble game. And I drew shapes onto the squares, and I'm just moving them around and seeing what was fun and what wasn't and what size of a grid would work best. Mm-hmm. And I finally found something that I was like, yeah, I think I have something here. So, you know, what do I have? And so I start going into kind of a more narrative mode at that point. Mm-hmm. And I've always been fascinated by AI, so maybe it's no surprise that I started thinking along those lines. And I was looking at the pipes and I started imagining them as circuits instead. And then I thought, what if this is, you know, like an interface for an AI, or maybe even the brain of an AI? Like, these circuits are essentially neurons, and the AI is actively, you know, processing data and trying to figure something out. Then I started imagining, okay, so what's the AI figuring out? And I pictured this young woman, this, you know, lonely, isolated woman, but also brilliant and, you know, with a beautiful soul. And she creates this AI to befriend it. Mm-hmm. And she wants to teach the AI to think and feel like humans feel. And, I decided, okay, she's going to teach this AI almost like a CAPTCHA program, you know, like a visual recognition. So that's what that's what my prototype became. And it became the main element of the game, was this system where basically you're forming a connection from one image to another, showing that the AI is learning to see as humans do. And I used a pixelization tool, so I would make the image harder to see.
Uh-huh.
And so the AI is actually using the instead of mines, I call them data clusters in the game, and it's basically just like large pieces of information that it's processing. So it's searching for these data clusters, and as it processes this data, the image becomes less and less pixelated because the AI is starting to see as humans do, and then it can figure out the correct answer.
That is so cool. I love the fact too that you're taking this concept and then putting it into, you know, what something that obviously is huge right now in AI and just things that people are doing. Like, I think this is a really interesting take on how someone goes about and how they're interacting with this AI. But then, of course, there's these puzzles within this, and then there's a whole backstory as to why Annie is even building this and what her, you know, kind of what her story is about. Let me ask you real quick, because obviously our friend Katie Benz is Annie in this. I love Katie to death. What was the decision to go and utilize voice actors and not just text?
Yeah, you know, I didn't know originally that we were going to go that route. That was something that Jack and I talked about. Jack Kaiser, he's the writer for the game, who was the first team member that I brought on once I had a workable prototype and started to see where I was going with the project. And that was something that we talked about back and forth. This game actually had more modest goals originally of just, you know, getting a game across the finish line, publishing it to Steam, getting that experience of fully polishing and marketing a game. But we fell in love with it, and we knew that we had to go for, you know, we had to do everything we could to make this game as special as it could be. And you know, some of those games are so much better because of sound. I think sometimes we underestimate the power of sound. And while the game would have been good without the voice acting, it's incredible with that voice acting.
Yeah, I'll say I think one of Katie's strengths too as an actor, she has that incredible depth she can portray of someone that might be a little tortured or somebody that there's more to what you're seeing just on the surface there. Can you talk though about what she brought to the table in her performance?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we took her to some intense places with this script. And she was so game. It was amazing to watch, actually. Actually, a funny story just about how Katie got added to the project. We were casting for Annie. Mm-hmm. And I noticed the Annie and the AI Twitter got a new follower, and I saw, oh, Katie Bentz, I wonder who this is. And I see that she voice acted Steph from Life is Strange. Yeah. Yes. And I just thought, like, while I haven't played the full series, I did play the first Life is Strange game, and I thought it was, you know, incredible. And more importantly, it was like, it's so close to our game in terms of genre. You know, it's narrative driven. It has beautiful voice acting and sound and music that really brings everything to life. I think that's really the key of what made that game so great. So anyway, I was very excited to see Katie follow us. And I reach out to her and I ask, like, hey, would you be interested in auditioning for the role of Annie? And she was really excited to hear from me. And she informs me that she already had. And I was like, wait, what? And so actually, before I reached out to her, I was kind of nerding out to Jack about it. I was like, hey, this girl, Katie Bentz, she just followed us. I think she might be great for Annie. We really need to audition or have her audition. And he's like, oh, cool. And I was like, yeah, so I'll reach out to her. And then I get back to Jack after her response, and I was like, oh, my gosh, she already did. What is it? So we're filtering through. We got a lot of responses. I think a couple hundred, and we find her audition, and she was just perfect. Just really brought Annie to life just in that short audition. And so you know, Jack, he was actually located in LA, which is also where Katie is, and we did our best to make sure all the voice actors were in the same region, and he called in some favors and was able to get a recording studio and bring people, you know, in person into that recording studio. And I'm located in Utah, so I was live streaming in when I could, and when I couldn't, I was, you know, reviewing the recordings. But the few live streams I watched, it was crazy watching how fast Katie could go from just joking around and laughing with the crew to getting into some really deep emotions and bringing on the tears. And it was a revelation to watch that.
I love that. I love that so much. Let me ask too, I'm very much one that notices the art style. And then of course I've got to talk about the music. Let us know, what were your guys' decisions behind kind of, cause I love the fact that it almost has this like comic book feel to it, but then it's just really interesting to me visually. And then obviously the music, like you were saying before, music has such a profound effect on not only games, but just visuals in general, and really helping to convey emotions, or it could even be used as a mechanic to help out a game. So what was that process for you guys?
Yeah, so the comic book aspect was, I was looking for a way to add more visual appeal. And one game that I really love is Slay the Spire.
Oh, yeah. And
yeah.
If you ever manage to get to the true end of that game, you'll see this short three comic, what would you call it? Animation, I guess, mm-hmm. Play out. And it's just crazy because I'm so into narrative, and Slay the Spire, you know, it gives you some lore, but it's one of those games that gives you just enough that your imagination can jump in and fill in the gaps. And you know, it's just three comic pieces at the end, and it was like still so moving to me, and so rewarding to get the true end, just to see those. And I thought, wow, it's crazy how powerful that is. And I want to see how we can, you know, add that into our game. So there's several sequences throughout the story, when usually when things are getting most intense, when there's a lot on the line, that we bring in those comics just to add that extra visual power to the moment.
I love that. And how about the music and just your choice of working with the composer? Like, what were some of the like, here's the feel or general feel, or was it more of a, here's what I have, let me see what you're gonna bring or what you're gonna produce from this?
Yeah, we brought on actually I had a sort of audition on Reddit, just through a Reddit post, asking any musicians awesome. Who were interested in giving me like a minute, and I got a lot of responses to that, and there was one, Light Return, who just really nailed it. Like, we were looking for something with kind of just a, like ethereal kind of feel to it, like very mm-hmm. emotional, like a bit sad but also hopeful. And he just nailed it with his performance. And since then, like, he's shown that he's just a true genius in his craft. Like, the way that he knows the moments and how to amplify the feelings of each moment. And in the soundtrack is really exciting too. I'm just working on getting that added to Steam. It'll probably show up about a week after Annie and the AI is available. There's one track called Captcha, and it just blows my mind because it starts off like pretty mellow, you know, and it's, you know, Esme the AI is just, you know, trying to figure things out, and as the song progresses, you could tell that Esme's forming these connections, and Esme's starting to get it, starting to understand. And then you know, there's this concept with AI, because it can be recursive and it could think mm-hmm. so quickly that it can just have a runaway effect. And the song kind of does that. Like, I swear his hands were probably on fire when he composed the last 20 seconds. It's like, Esme's like, I get it. And just goes to the races. And it's just so cool. It gives me chills when I hear the end of Captcha.
You know, you talked before about how one of the biggest changes you made was the change in UI there. And it seems to me that is a pretty big shift, right? Because you're changing perspective there. If you had stuck with your original plan for UI, do you think it would have drastically affected how players thought about the story or took to the story or what their takeaways might be from it?
I don't think so. I think that the story is so powerful and it's real, and the sound and the music amplifies that, and the comics like popping in at just the right moments to bring it even further. I think people would have loved the game even without that. But so the older interface, it was more inside Esme's world, and it kind of had like a old school Tron like appearance to mm-hmm. it. But we just realized that this story is so personal; it's very intimate, and it made sense to bring the player in deeper and to make the UI feel more like you're looking at Annie's desktop. Mm-hmm. So I think it was definitely a worthwhile thing. This is the first time that I've gotten to this, like, you know, the polishing stage. And, you know, I'd say 90% of the effort of a game is, you know, like, you get 90% of the way there with the first 50% of your effort, and then that polishes like you know, that last 10% is like 50% of your effort. Right. So it's a trip. Like, you're working just as hard, but you don't feel it quite as much. It could be hard, like motivationally, but at the same time, it helps that you know that your game is already good and you're just making it that little bit better.
Let me ask, Annie and the AI, is there something that you're hoping that gamers take away from this? Or is it more about seeing how people interpret the story?
Yeah, I think it's open enough that I wanted people to be able to put themselves into the story as opposed to only seeing it as Annie's story. Mm-hmm. And I think that we did achieve that. I just hope that it inspires people. There's a lot, so much pain in the world today. And just to know that, like, you're never actually alone. And, you know, there's help out there for people who have, you know, suffered family trauma or other sorts of trauma. And, like, there is a way back. So I think it's a, you know, it goes to some dark places, but overall it's an inspirational tale, and I hope that it helps people.
When you craft a story, especially an emotional one, you know, as a writer, I find that sometimes the hardest part is figuring out what to cut or how to say things in a way that fits in a shorter space than you may want or think you needed at the beginning. What was the biggest challenge in crafting the story and making sure it was paced well, hit all the beats you wanted to hit, but also not have it be overly long or kind of extend past where you thought it felt natural?
Before I brought Jack on to the project, I had kind of an outline that was quite a bit different than it was a more like world altering kind of story. It was still focused on these two characters and their relationship, but it also had aspects that affected the entire world. And then Jack comes onto the project, and he just brought it to a much more personal and intimate level. He said that let's just focus on Annie's family. And reading through his original script, I just absolutely loved what he did. It was amazing. And I realized that was the way to go. And let's just keep this story within Annie's family and dig into that. And I think the only challenge that came from that is that I had always pictured this as two stories, you know, almost like instead of a main character, there was Annie and there was Esme, and it was both of their stories equally. And with all of the improvements that Jack had added to the original outline I had, it became Annie's story, and Esme was just more of a supporting role. Mm-hmm. So I think the biggest challenge that we came across, for the most part, it was smooth sailing for us. It was just about getting that right balance where we hit the stuff about Esme that I was really interested in. Like, I've always been fascinated by AI and the similarities and the differences that an AI might have. And I wanted to explore some of those things with the game. Like, what would it be like as an AI to not have a body,
right?
You know, to experience this world without the same kind of inputs and outputs that a human body provides. That mm-hmm. It's such an interesting thing to think about. And lots of other concepts, like to be essentially immortal but also powerless to, you know, prevent yourself from being turned off or worse, being deleted or something like that. And when I think back to some of my favorite characters in games, like Mass Effect, I love Edie, and mm-hmm. you know, Edie gets a fixation on humor and understanding humor, which makes a lot of sense because there's something very human about humor. And if an AI can understand humor, then it'd be really hard to tell the difference between artificial and, you know, whether you're just talking to a person. So yeah, I think that was a big challenge, where I would push back at times saying like, no, we need to dig deeper into what Esme feels at this moment. Mm-hmm. We can't just move forward yet. And sometimes I would go too far and he would be like, okay, now you're treading on Annie's story a little bit. So kind of ended up with, I became a champion of Esme while he was a champion of Annie. But we both respected each other so much and had great communication that I think it just worked perfectly. And he would bring me in line when he needed to. And at times I would add my technical expertise and just my passion for the subject. Mm-hmm. And would even write some of Esme's lines myself at times.
It's just really interesting, especially because I'm the same way. Just this rise of AI and all the different uses and things like that people are utilizing it. But to sit there and kind of taking a step back and being like, you know, these AIs are being trained and learning, and what kind of stuff are they picking up? Do they, then you start thinking, you know, because they know this stuff, then does that mean that they maybe have a soul, or, you know, there's so many crazy like questions and directions that you can go with this. From the beginning, from when you started to where we are today, the game launches tomorrow, yesterday, as of this release, What would you say, if anything, that if you could go back, that you would look at possibly going back and changing or maybe doing differently?
You know, I think it's kind of awesome how AI has taken such a large view of the, you know, of society at this point, like with the ChatGPT coming out and all of that. It makes me seem almost like a prophet, right? Making this game, but I wasn't there when I started. I was one of the geeks that was just already like really interested in AI, and now I have this game coming out when everybody's thinking about it. So that worked out. I'm actually not sure what I would change, if anything. This project was, it started out with just like the humble goal of just being an experience builder. And then I absolutely fell in love with the game, and I put everything I could into it. I just don't see it going any other way. Like, it is possible that I could have reined it in a little bit. But I don't think I would have, you know. I want people to experience the story on the best terms that it can possibly be experienced. So even if this game doesn't produce the kinds of sales that I want, like, it's already such a success for me.
You know, I find it interesting that in a lot of mediums, AI has been viewed with such a negative lens, right? I mean, I right. think back to like some of the action movies that defined my childhood, like Terminator, The Matrix, you know, even more recently Ex Machina, which seemed ambiguous, and then there was the end to that movie. But it seems like that a lot of people's focus in a lot of other mediums has just been on AI is how we're going to kill ourselves. Like this is what do you hope the conversation about AI steers toward? Or what do you think people, you hope people will take into account or how we look at it?
I think that caution is more than warranted, with this kind of thing. It comes back to the, just the, like the recursive nature and the processing speed of an AI. Like, If we don't get it right, and we don't, you know, control that kind of learning and growth, we can lose control of it. But I don't think that it necessarily has to always be viewed as negativity is the only possible outcome. Like, utopia is also a very possible outcome of this, and it's just so fascinating to me. I love the just thinking about the nature of consciousness, you know, like, mm-hmm. there's so many tests and you know, theories about how to approach like testing consciousness, but we can't prove it within ourselves. And yet we're obsessed with an AI proving to us that it's conscious. And the truth is like, we'll never know. I think what will happen is that an AI will just get good enough that it's going to feel right. And it's right. going to feel so human that we're just going to accept it. And maybe it is conscious and maybe it's not. Maybe it's more conscious than we are or less conscious than we are. I just hope that it is approached with the right kind of caution. And so I'm a game developer. I code. And I get things wrong every time. And then I look at the bug and figure out how I was wrong. Uh-huh. Right. And then I eventually get it right. I think that's probably one of the reasons why people do feel cautious is because we get it wrong before we get it right.
Right.
And also we haven't been able to come to a consensus on most subjects, you know, like there's always debates, on literally any topic that you could think of. There's somebody who thinks differently about it. So that it's such a challenge to create, something that's going to better the world because, like whose description are you following for that? You
right.
It's a tricky subject, but it's exciting times too, right?
Like it is.
Yes.
It could work out.
Yeah, and there's so much. There's so many different, you know, possibilities that could come from this, in helping people or just helping to develop other things that maybe would take much longer for a human to do. You know, these AI can compute and gather and do this stuff within, you know, milliseconds. So I've always try to see it as a positive, but also having a bit of also being cautious and watching what it's doing and what it's capable of doing, because I've seen too many of the movies, you know. Next, you know, at what point in time, you know, they're helping us build cars and stuff. Next thing you know, they're revolting because they're like, yo, why do we have to do your work? And it's like, you know, that's a good point. That's a good point. But yeah, I know. Go ahead. Were you going to say something?
No, go for it.
Oh, so this, the game, again, comes out, or came out, I should say, on the 23rd. It's on Steam. Is there any other plans to bring it to any other platforms?
It depends on the kind of reception we get on Steam. I think that it would lend itself pretty well to, like, Nintendo Switch.
Yes.
Especially. And I might eat my words here, but I don't think it would be, like, too daunting to port it to consoles. So that's definitely stuff that's on our mind, especially Nintendo Switch, but we just have to see how it performs first,
you know. And I know that this game is just come out, but is this obviously without the benefit of playing this game yet, but is this like a universe or is this a subject matter you'd like to explore more?
So there is room. That's something that I talked to Jack about months ago. We did leave room for, you know, possible DLC or maybe even a sequel. That's another thing that we're keeping in mind for now. But we also have many ideas for different stories that we want to tell in different universes. So I think that's another thing that comes down to reception and, you know, what our fans think. Like if they're dying to get more Annie and the AI, there is room for that. For now, we're just kind of seeing how things play out and also exploring some of these other ideas that we have.
Johnny, we're amongst friends. You can share some of those new ideas.
Yeah, until we decide not to go with it. And we
how
I don't want to disappoint Ryan in the live stream.
I'm just disappointed.
Yo, I'm really pumped to play the game. Again, this concept's amazing. We love Katie. I can't wait to, you know, dig into this and see this full story. Let folks know, where can they find more information? Where can they get the game? I know obviously we said Steam, but just lay it on us, brother.
Yeah, so you could follow us at Annie and the AI on Twitter. That's the primary location. We're also we're on Discord, and you can find a link to that from Twitter, and then there's the Steam page. So just go to Steam and search for Annie and the AI, and there's their Twitter.
I was waiting on that.
Congratulations on the launch, my friend. I know this is a big moment, so I hope you get to enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, I'm so excited to watch some of these streams. We have some live streamers. Obviously, Katie Bentz is going to stream the game. I think today, the day this comes out. So that's going to be extremely exciting. She's resisted the urge to play any of the builds beforehand, so she's coming in fresh.
I love a good blind playthrough, just going in and experiencing it, taking it in for what it is, and being able to have that live reaction to something is a great feeling. It's a great feeling. Absolutely. Again, Johnny, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Congratulations on the launch of Annie and the AI. Lucas, what do you got going on this weekend, my friend?
Hopefully I'll have some more time to game. Okay, I'm going to admit this. I kind of like the Fast movies, too. They're like a guilty pleasure of mine. And I'm going to call out Twitter and some movie reviewers out there. I had two of the things spoiled. One of them was before the movie officially came out. So I'm like, what? Not that I see these movies for the plot. However, this particular twist that got spoiled for me, I'm just like, dude, what the heck? Like, I didn't even have a chance to see it. So, you know what? Shame on you guys. Anyway, hopefully more Zelda. I would love to jump into Annie and the AI. I feel like this is a game that I gotta carve out a couple hours for, though, because I feel like it's gonna engross me too much. So I just gotta make sure that I don't have anything else that I actually need to get done before I start this game. But I love it. It looks amazing, and I can't wait to play it. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, no, same. I'm going to be grinding hard to finish Jedi Survivor. I should finish that here in the next couple of days. And then, I'll probably end up streaming Annie and the AI at some point in time this week as well. I love a good narrative, and especially with the whole concept of this game, I think this will be a lot of fun for stream as well. And then hopefully by this weekend, I can start Tears of the Kingdom and really kind of dive deep into that. But right now, the focus is Jedi Survivor, because if I start anything else, that game is never going to get finished. I know you guys know what I'm talking about, but we hope you guys have an amazing week. Again, thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, hit us up on the tweeters at LandPartiesPod, at LucasEggen, or at Smitty2447. Again, don't forget, check out Annie and the AI out now on Steam. Go pick it up. I believe it's $8.99 on there. So it's going to be an amazing game. And of course, you can check out Katie, or there's going to be people streaming it as well. So if you want to see it beforehand, make sure you check out those streams. We appreciate your faces, and you know what it is. We love your faces.